Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
It was another busy, busy week in technology, as it always is, of course. This week, we're going to feature Ryan Allis, who's the co-founder of iContact, and he became a multimillionaire at quite a young age. But I'm featuring him because of his early interest in philanthropy and making a difference with technology. He's actually done some impressive, impressive things. And, of course, selfie is the word of the year. Some very, very big, big news. The tech giants have really been helping out in the Philippines after the typhoon in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the sharing economy, because now there are a lot of websites out there where people just, you know, things that they're not using, they share, and it's becoming more and more rampant, and many other things. People have found a way around the Chinese firewall and other things. And, of course, it was a giant, giant mailbag.
The door opens, and in comes Mr. Big Voice. This way you don't have to...
Here we go.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
That's 2 weeks in a row. He's actually helping out.
Yeah, he was trying to help. You know, I'm thinking that it's Christmas bonus time.
That's you it. Know, he's just kinda, sucking up.
He is. He's sucking up until he gets his little Christmas bonus, and then boom.
January 1st,
he'll go back to his regular old self again.
Feet up in the corner, drinking coffee.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We got an email from Chris. Love the show, Doc. But if William Cleland Lowe was born in 1941, it's not possible for him to die at the age of 82, Chris. You know, Chris, you're right. I double-checked it. And 213 minus 41 is actually 72. And I don't know what happened. I just misspoke when I was talking last time.
You thought it was 2003 instead of 2013. Maybe that was it.
So he was actually 72, not 82. My notes said 72, but I must have just, you know...
Well, the 8 is right next to the 7 on the keyboard, and sometimes typos do happen, right?
That could be the problem.
Yes.
That's right. We had an email from Led by a Brain, which is always the proper thing to be led by.
A regular
listener, yes.
Yeah.
Dr. Schertz, I'll be 63 years old, February 2014, and I've been working for the last decade as a tech writer, and I want to find another kind of work because I don't have any passion for it anymore. Hmm. Prior to this, I worked as in the legal community, an intellectual property researcher. You know, but law firms don't like older people. HR director said this. That's why I'm never called for an interview. So I'm interested in pursuing IT training as sort of a path to a new career. Can I really get a job that pays the house payment? Is this a field where they don't discriminate against older workers? And will it be quicker than getting a multi-year degree? I've got a liberal arts education. I'm good health and want to work for another 10 years. If I can find something that I'm passionate about. By the way, how many older students does Stratford enroll? Older meaning over 55. Thanks, Led Bright Brain.
This is all very interesting.
This is actually a very interesting dilemma, because, and it's worth talking about in some detail, because there, I can sort of give insight to this. There are really two sides of the story. One is getting something that you're truly passionate about, and then the second is penetrating the HR shield so that you can talk to the right person and don't have all this age issue coming up. Now, we have many people who come to Stratford to pursue their passion. It's very frequently. And if you already have a degree, you can transfer in those credits and you can get a second bachelor's degree quite quickly. Many people who want to switch from a non-tech field to a tech field will take a few bridge courses, 4 or 5 courses to give them the IT foundation, and then they'll go straight into a master's degree program, which could be either in information systems or software engineering. Now, my sister was actually in a similar situation. She now has a different last name. I'll talk about her a little bit.
Okay.
Nobody able to track her down. She taught elementary school for 20 years. And after 20 years, she was around 50 or so, and she was just burnt out. She just couldn't do it anymore. And so I had her come up. She lived in Texas. I had her come up to Stratford, and she took the IT program. Then I let her work in our network department for about 3 or 4 months, and then I said, well, it's time for you to get a job. And so she actually said, well, I don't know whether anybody will want me with my age and all this, blah, blah, blah. So I fired her. because the only way to get her focused and out of all this excuse stuff
was to make her hungry.
So I fired her. So I was like my dad, my other sisters, they thought, Rick, you have just become a cruel Simon Legree.
No.
Within 2 months, she got a great job.
It's probably the best thing
you
ever did.
And she came back after she got that up. She says, actually, I was really mad at you, but it's the best thing you could have done. She ended up getting a job. There's a lot of contract work here, and she ended up getting a job with the contractor. And she was the oldest person on the team. She had a bunch of young Turks with her. But here's the thing. She was a teacher. And so you know how IT people treat the user like idiots?
Mm-hmm.
She treated them like students, and she taught them. And so it turned out her teaching ability combined with her IT knowledge was actually quite unique. And so she was put in a lot of key roles. So now she works for a government agency, which I don't want to say, but it's she's got a top secret clearance, and she is got a great long-term role. I think now she's probably over 60, still working in the job, and she loves it. So she actually was able to be successful, but she didn't go in as a pure IT play. It was a combo of a teacher with some management and super, some ability to work with people and people skills, along with the IT that got her the job. So that's kind of the message here. So in your case, you've actually worked as a tech writer. You've worked in the legal field, so I could see you leveraging some of your past technology, combining it with IT, and then you've got some unique capacity. And I'll tell you, these IT teams with a bunch of young guys on them, and my sister had all young kids on them. I mean, they were mostly male, not many female, but she was mature. And there's a difference. I have to tell you, between the generations, there's a difference in work ethic.
There absolutely is.
And I tell you, she was always on call. She was always handling the phone. She was just so focused on doing the job in a certain way that she just had exceptional performance and just moved right up. And so I think it turned out to be a very great career change for her.
If our friend Mr. Bird comes in later on, we should ask about this, because he did a piece that I heard upstairs on the mothership, mm-hmm. about this whole thing of the difference between the new generation and older workers.
That's right, and
the work ethic. It's just totally different.
And so but my sister did have this one dilemma. She said, "Well, I don't think I can get a job with my age and everything." That's why I had to fire her, and then she ended up getting a job. And she got it through her connections at Stratford. This is what happened, because we have all these adjuncts that are working in the field. One of the guys who was actually working at a contractor knew her, knew what a good student she was, and she got a job through his recommendation. So it was kind of the Stratford network that got mm-hmm. her in mm-hmm. and around, and she didn't go through the normal HR stuff. So it is possible to do. Now, it really depends on what you like to do. I would suggest you take rather than get a second bachelor's like my sister did, I would, now when I'm looking at the employment situation, I would recommend that you would take a few bridge classes, get into a master's degree like information systems, software engineering, and you could leverage this. Like our software engineering students, a lot of them, probably most of the initial jobs in software engineering are not writing code. It's doing what they call business analyst, where you understand the technology, you talk to the users, and then you try to write requirements that can be put into code. And so with your background, I could see you doing like business analyst work for a law firm or there are just a lot of things, and you use your background and do that. That could be a good match. So with that kind of just overall advice, I'd say just if you email me, I could put you in contact with the chair of our computer information systems department in Falls Church, and you could give him more specifics, and he could show you what some of the opportunities are. But I think it's I really think you can pursue a second career, because 50 is the new 30, and 60 is the new 40.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people are working second careers, and they work in something that they really have a passion for later on.
You have to these days, and folks just, even at older ages, seem younger, so they still have a lot of gas left in the tank. There's a lot of experience that goes along with it.
There's a lot of experience. And what we do, all of our IT classes are built around projects, so you end up with a portfolio of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have our students join user groups. So then you've got this portfolio working on projects. You go out to work with user groups. So these are people who hire, and so you use networking techniques, and you begin acting like an IT professional. And so we actually teach our students how to use the principles that are embodied in Dick Bowles' book, What Color's Your Parachute? And you're a classic case of somebody wants to change careers and look at find out what you do. So it was a great email, and I think we probably could help you. Now,
in terms of Stratford, now the last question he asked was, and I'm assuming he's a he.
But no, she.
Is she. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. How many people these days do you see coming back to school at older ages? Are you seeing any of that at Stratford?
We are. We get we just had a medical doctor come back and get a culinary degree.
You're kidding.
So
because it was what he wanted to do.
That was a woman. It was because she wanted to do. It was her passion, and she was in medicine because her dad was in medicine. The whole family was in medicine, so she had to become a doctor. And after about 15 years, she says, "Look, this is not what I like." And so we have a lot of people who do come back and for their passion. And so we have second careers that are after retirement. We got people sort of mid career. They just hate their job, and so sort of our forte is we can get people through quickly. And so we're the shortest path to where you are and the job you really want.
Mm-hmm.
So we can get, and we have classes that accommodate people that are working. So you just keep working, and then we can place you. And then we've got students. We've got other students who are, say, they're between 20 and 25 that actually never started a career. Maybe they were goofing off in high school, partied a little too much. They're bright, but they just had a different priority. And then around 26 or 27, when their friends are now graduating from college and having jobs and can get a better boyfriend or girlfriend, they said, maybe I better get focused again. This McDonald's job, it was great while I was in high school, but it's not probably a good career. So they come back,
mm-hmm.
but with a real focus. And they become, even if they weren't really good grades in high school, with that additional focus, because they are bright, They do quite well at Stratford.
That must be interesting, because you're now in so many different cities that you see, regionally, so many different kinds of people at each of your campuses.
There are, yeah. We have a wide, like down at Virginia Beach, it's mostly military.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot of military programs. And in Baltimore, we see a lot of kids coming out of the Baltimore school system that need their skills beefed up. And then we need to transition them into the employment base. And so we do a pretty intense program there to get these kids ready for the employment market. But everything we do is focused on getting them through the program and getting them placed.
Mm-hmm.
So there are broad differences, but we are focused on developing a program that meets the needs of the student wherever they are. And so there are different, I give you two or three different what we call personas, different types of students. We have a wide variety of students, and we teach them all. The other thing that happens is that whenever we have an older student in class, they become kind of a mentor for the younger students. And so I find this age difference in the classroom is really effective.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same reason why the age difference for my sister was effective in her IT team. This cross-generational advice really does make a better environment.
I guess, and it also, just thinking, it probably helps that when you get to this stage, when you wind up at Stratford, it's because you want to be there. It's not because you have to be there. So people don't look at an older person and look down their noses at them. They probably think, well, this is somebody that I could learn from.
So the primary thing is you have to believe that you're not too old. I mean, that
That's
is actually the primary thing. If you believe that you've got a lot of juice
mm-hmm.
and you can do it, you're going to convince people that. But if you're thinking that you're too old and you act like it and you ask questions that sort of give the indication that you think you're too old, then people are going to say, yeah, you're really too old for this. So it's really a self-fulfilling prophecy. If mm-hmm. if you think you are too old, you are too old. That's right. So
you made that the comment about Baltimore. We were talking about this off air, mm-hmm. Where you have to do remedial work with these kids because they're not getting what they need in high school. Is that something you see wherever you are, or
well,
is it?
Well, there are differences between the cities. Some of the inner city schools, the reading and math is a little bit lower,
mm-hmm.
And so we do more math remediation and reading remediation. We don't call it remediation. We really call it read for success. It, mm-hmm. You try to make it positive. You don't
right?
want to make it sound demeaning, but we have to bring these kids up to a certain point so that they can be successful. But no matter where we go, writing skills are really deficient. I mean, mm-hmm. it turns out that we're in the cut and paste, culture. And even from affluent areas, kids do way too much cutting and pasting. And so we have to teach them about plagiarism.
Is this a function of the fact that people don't use pens anymore, that they don't write things out longhand, and we have the ability to, like you say, cut mm-hmm. and paste out of a Wikipedia article?
Yeah, I mean, we talk in shorthand. We rarely write a long, well thought out paper. And when you're writing, it's really logic in words.
Sure.
And so what we do to combat this problem is all of our classes are blended, where you actually, in addition to going to class, you actually have threaded discussions where you have to demonstrate some type of critical thinking in an answer online. And what we have found is that even culinary classes have the threaded discussion component, because we found the best way to learn how to write is to just write.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have low stakes assignments. You just have to write a paragraph. It's easier to write it than it is to try to look something up.
Sure.
And so we found that this writing every day in this threaded discussion has really helped the students develop their writing skills. And so we do that. We have a lot of support in the library. We have them come in. They do the plagiarism test on their paper, and they try to clean it up before they turn it in. So in the old days, this wasn't the issue. You had all this writing in high school. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like college has become the new high school in a way, in mm-hmm. terms of writing and mm-hmm. in these core skills. And so we do focus on that, because I believe that the way to get a promotion is to be able to communicate.
Sure.
And so, the hard skills are going to get you the job, but the soft skills, like being able to communicate, being able to think critically and analyze problems, are basically going to put you in a leadership position and you can move up. So we have a lot of emphasis at Stratford on the soft skills, but we know that the hard skills that they need to get that job.
Okay.
So that was a great question,
yeah.
Led by Brain. This is a long-term listener. We got an email from Arnie. Hi, Dr. Schertz. Interesting article regarding broadband fees in different parts of the world. I guess we don't have things so bad here with Verizon after all. You use various methods of reducing fees on your phone when traveling overseas, but for those who live in those places, broadband can be a bit pricey. Thanks, Arnie. Well, Arnie, that was an interesting article about the rest of the world, and I mean, people are paying $200-$300 a month for broadband, but it turns out that other parts of the world, they're very reasonable broadband. The one thing that we have in the U.S. is that we've got fairly uniform broadband coverage, even in the rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
In the developing countries, you have good broadband in the cities, but you go out into the rural areas, you don't really have good broadband. And so that's what Arnie was discovering here. So
we have a visitor. Shall we?
We've got a visitor.
Since we have kind of a natural break here, should we?
Yes,
just,
I think let's.
The party don't start till I walk in.
Hi, folks. This is David Burke.
Don't stop, make it pop.
Wow. Hello.
That's beautiful.
Isn't that nice? You have your own.
I am impressed.
Well, you are host emeritus of this program. You need to be treated with respect.
Thank you, sir. Very nicely done. Doc, how are you this morning?
Good.
You got the memo on the black outfit.
Oh yeah, I did. Right. I'm trying to look good.
We're both going ninja.
That's right.
I was going to say, you guys have a Chinese Death Star.
I'm a technical ninja. Yeah,
there I'm we telling. Go. I've been using this Waze, this new W-A-Z-E, the new navigation system.
Oh, lovely!
I love it because it tells you where the speed traps are. It tells you where.
Really?
It tells you where all of the stoplight cameras are.
You mean the new 137 ones they put in the district?
You'd never know that this guy would have to worry about speed traps and red light cameras.
No, I don't worry about it at all.
Well, no, you don't
I'm
now.
Just, I'm just taking care of my my listeners.
What do you holler from the back of the car? Teddy, slow it down, please.
Viceroy.
Exactly.
Viceroy.
So what happens is that it's sort of crowdsourced, so people press a button whenever they see a speed trap, and so there are just thousands of Waze users, and so you can always tell what the speed of the traffic is anywhere. It actually is, it's a crowdsourced navigation system, and if there's a backup in one place, it will reroute me to another location.
He's disrespecting the traffic reporter on the other side.
He's pre-programmed, isn't he?
I know.
Yeah, just right off the bat, boom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Doc, can I just change the topic?
You can certainly change the topic.
Explain to me why the FCC is thinking about allowing cell phones on planes all the time.
I think the FCC just got tired of the airlines giving the technical reason that we couldn't have it. Because bogus.
There.
It's been bogus.
That's fine. I understand the bogus part, but this is the part. I want to be able to get on my laptop or my little tablet, or whatever you want to call it, and just check email and do stuff on my tablet. I don't want to be on a plane with 300 people all saying in unison, hey, guess where I am on the phone. Guess where I am. And, you know...
I
don't want us to do that.
Although I have to say, used the satellite phone on the airplane. Have you ever used that satellite phone?
No,
it's
in
a briefcase.
You know it's in the front.
Oh, yeah.
You know it's built into the seat in front.
Oh, that's
of
the
you.
One that's $15,000 a second.
Dave, I called in and did Tech Talk Live with the satellite phone once.
Doc, with all your dough, you should be buying everybody lunch forever.
Buy his own plane.
My phone bill for that hour was only $800.
Oh, my God. That's kind of cheap, tell you the truth.
I know it's kind of crazy. Yeah, really.
Can you see that? There's no way on an airplane you can go to the quiet car like they do on Amtrak.
An articulated airplane. That way we could have the talking section.
As a revenue enhancement scam.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Oh, you want the flight? No, we're going to have non-phone flights and phone flights. Can you put up with a three-hour flight with 300 people talking on the cell phone?
I do not want phone I don't mind chat. See, I don't mind texting.
Texting,
chat. I don't mind
texting,
that at all.
Surfing,
you don't bother other people.
Internet, all that kind of stuff. Maybe they need to clarify this. Just use your laptops and everything else, but no.
No talking.
So what, please. So, sweet Zeus, no talking.
No talking.
Okay.
So what I did when I did that show for an hour, because
it's
all about him. Okay. What about you, Doc?
Thank you. Let's get back on the right focus here.
All right, yeah, yeah. All right.
So I went around everybody around me and asked for permission. I said, "You know, I got
to
do this show for an hour
to talk."
You know, I said, "You might. I got to do this show. I just don't like nothing I can do. Is it okay?" And everybody around me said, "Okay." And
really?
And so then because
for an hour,
it was for an hour, but because I asked.
You were nice.
But actually, it was.
And you gave them Tech Talk trinkets, too, those little squeezy rubber bands.
Exactly right. Yeah. The stress balls.
Stress balls here.
That's
the stress
right.
Ball. Shaped like a brain. Wow.
So clever. But I actually kind of agree with you. And they make you turn off. Right now, you've got to turn off your iPad. You can't. It's stupid.
Can't listen to music.
So,
all that kind
so,
of stuff.
So one time I was on the plane. I had my iPad and I was reading an iBook. And then the stewardess said, "Well," and I was in airplane mode. I'm not bothering anybody. And they said, "You have to turn that off to land." And so then I thought that was stupid. So as soon as they left, I opened it. I was secretly reading it under the blanket.
This guy is, you wouldn't know.
You're a one-liner. You get it.
He's a rebel.
Okay, he is
Isn't
a rebel.
He?
And there was this woman across the aisle. She was looking at me, and she says.
From under her blanket.
She says, okay. "Don't you know that you can't have that
you
on
can,
because
you can
we could
the
crash.
Airplane.
Oh, yeah, lady.
She could
sure.
crash.
Yeah.
And so she was like freaking out. So I said, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
easy,
okay,
lady.
Don't ease on. I'll turn it off. So then I turned it off. But of course, I just. Put down the cover. It's still on, but I can't see it. But then she was happy.
When the seatbelt light comes on, do you just get all...
I wear the seatbelt. Well,
okay.
See, the thing is, I know pilots that use their cell phone in the cockpit. The pilots think the whole thing is stupid.
Wow.
Okay. So this All is right. so the FCC, I think, just got fed up with the airlines blaming them for a policy that the airlines have not wanted talking on the phone for a while because they know that it bothers their passengers.
So now they're going to put it on the airlines.
Of course. So now the airlines have to say no talking, but they can't blame the FCC. I think FCC just got tired of them being blamed.
Airlines will turn this into a new revenue
stream. Now, David's point, do you see this happening? Could we now get talking and non-talking flights?
I think they'll allow texting. I'd love to have text messages I'm up there.
Yeah.
You know, you just say, I'm about ready to land.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Have you ever tried to turn on your cell phone and log on to a tower while you're still flying?
Doc, only you do that kind of stuff.
Do you take the Cantenna in the airplane with you?
It is actually quiet. So actually, when you get down below about 2,000 feet,
this is research.
You can turn on your cell phone, put it at the window, and you can pick up a tower, and you can actually download your emails.
But don't you jam from
the airplane?
Don't do that when you're sitting next to me on the airplane.
He'll punch you.
I'll freak out. That's why I'll freak out. Please.
When you're at that altitude, don't you jam all of the other cell phone towers within sight that you can see? Because it's line of sight communication, right?
He's lost. Help him out.
Okay. But they select. There's a selection process. I go to the strongest tower, and they self-select.
And he can pick that out
so
at 20,000 feet.
So more than one tower could...
Over there. That's the tower I want.
More than one, you know. Now, when I hike to the top of Old Rag Mountain, getting back to me again.
Here we go. It's your show, though. You're allowed to do that. Listen, boys, I got to run. Actually, I got something on the stove.
From the top of Old Rag Mountain, you can do cell phones from up there and pick up cell phone towers.
Yes, Jimbo.
Quick question. A couple weeks ago, we were talking about the difference in work ethic between older people and young people in the workforce.
Oh, really?
You did a piece, the talkback question, several weeks ago about the difference.
Right.
You're not remembering this.
It's 2 weeks. It's too long ago.
In bird ears, that's forever. I mean, you know, that was 2 weeks ago. But what's the question?
The question was, tell us what the callers were telling you. You only got older people calling because the younger ones were all still asleep.
They're protecting their jobs, and the young ones were asleep. It's a split. Older workers are better because they're more experienced. The younger ones, you can pay them less, and they'll do more work. Okay? I mean, this is what it all boils down to.
Gotcha. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That's pretty much it. Right. Are you backing me up on this, Doc?
I'm backing you up. But what we found in IT, because we've placed some older workers in IT, a few older workers mix in with these young Turks really makes a good mix because they've got kind of a different work ethic, and they also can deal with the user in a more – they don't tell the user off. and they can teach the user. Yeah. And so there are opportunities, and we've placed some of our older students into IT teams with a lot of young people, and they've been quite successful.
Okay, Doc,
of the difference.
Page two, more about you. When are you going to talk about holiday gifts in the technical side?
Yeah.
That's going to be coming.
Can you promo that show?
It'll be coming in 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
In 2 weeks.
The hot tech gifts.
The hot tech gifts in 2 weeks.
Not these PhD, you and three other guys on the planet like. Okay. I'm talking about us folks.
You mean the robots, like building your own
space elevator out of the Brookstone catalog?
Yeah, I don't need a space elevator at Brookstone, no. But, you know, I'll be listening to that show. It's going to be a good show.
Okay, it's going to be in 2 weeks. I'm going to do that. I'm already doing all the research.
That's a promo. But one thing the Doc does do, and you know this, Jimbo, he does some deep dish research.
He does some deep work.
You know, you want to know what nano? He's all over it.
He's all over it.
In fact, we're talking about nanotechnology later in the show.
Wow.
So you can stop back. I wish I could
be here.
Do you talk back, then come back down, okay?
I'll try. I'll do
and then
best.
We'll get some string theory on for you because we know how much you like that.
I love that.
Time travel. I did one show on time travel.
Doc, I still have your note from that show, and it's a good show.
And remember,
Waze.
Yeah, Waze.
Cameras, traffic.
I'm going to use it now, getting back upstairs.
W-A-Z-E. It's my new favorite app.
It's always talked about for the past 2 weeks.
Say hello to Mrs. Doc for
me. I will.
She won anything lately? Any free stuff? No?
No, she hasn't won an iPad recently. That's why I'm waiting for my upgrade. I'm waiting for the iPad Air.
Air. Yeah.
I'm waiting for the iPad Air because, you know, but she's not winning anything, so I have to send her to more conferences.
Something's wrong.
There you go.
I've got to send her to more conferences.
Bye, boys.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, bye-bye. David Byrd. Okay. David, happy Thanksgiving. Have a great week. Okay, Doc, let's continue on with the mailbag here. We had an email from Steve that you're about to talk about.
Steve Single, yes. Hi, Doc and Jim. A program called Sweet Pack. Sweet Pack has become entrenched in my PC. When I try to uninstall it, it gives me the message, unable to remove since the file can't be located. And then it goes into a loop, so I can't remove it or any other program because it says wait until the current install is over. Doc, how can I remove this leech from my PC? Your loyal listener, Steve Singal in Potomac, Maryland. Well, Sweet Pack, Steve, as you know, is an adware program which is promoted via free download. So, and once it's installed, it will add to your browser the SweetPacks toolbar. It'll change your homepage to start at sweetpacks.com. It'll set your browser default search engine to search.sweetpacks.com. The SweetPacks search will display advertisements and sponsored links in your search results. The SweetPacks toolbar that got on your computer after you installed it installs other stuff that's bundled with it, with the installer. For example, you might install SweetIM, SweetPCFix, or GamePacks. And you might also agree to install the other SweetPacks add-ons. And so the question that you have is, how do you uninstall this? Because there's a lot of stuff installed. Well, you can go to malwaretips.com because you have to uninstall the toolbar, and then you've got to specifically go through and uninstall each of the programs. And it sounds like you have done a partial uninstall on one of the programs. Then you can do a scan with malware, and you can malware bytes, and then you can actually get rid of it all. And so this particular link that I'll give you, malwaretips.com/blogs/remove-sweet-packs-toolbar, goes through all of the details, and it's fairly complicated because they have a lot of different names for things that they install. But you can get rid of it, but it is complicated. But the lesson from this is be very careful when you download these free programs because they may come things mm-hmm. like this might come along right with it.
URL we will post on yes. the website. So, Steve, if you didn't get it, just go to techtalkonline.com later on, and we'll have it.
That's
all there
right. malwaretips.com/blog/remove-sweet-packs-toolbar. Dear Dr. Schertz, many months ago I downloaded, installed, successfully used the Tor browser on my iMac. I don't use this browser a lot, and then I went to it last night. I got this server proxy error message, and I couldn't figure out how to get rid of it. And I got a smart IT guy, wrote him the issue, and he suggested I uninstall and reinstall Tor. He also raised some questions about Tor. He said, well, maybe Verizon's blocking my access. If so, what should I do? Should I uninstall and reinstall Tor? And in case you haven't been following Snowden's revelations, NSA apparently targets people who use Tor. I'm not sure what that means, but maybe you could fill me in. Thanks, Lauren. Well, Lauren, there are some bugs. Well, let me explain what Tor is. The State Department developed Tor, which is a proxy server program, so that people behind firewalls that were filtering content, like behind the Great Chinese Firewall, or they might be in some Asian countries, they could actually go out using Tor to a proxy server, and it would be an encrypted data link, and then they could surf the web and look at blocked sites. And this was a service that the U.S. government provided. And it turned out that some recent releases of Tor, it's not a browser, it's actually a proxy. You're actually going to a proxy server, and you're configuring the Firefox browser to use this proxy server. And it turns out that some of the recent releases of this Tor software for your computer had some errors in the script, and they were going to port 9050 on the proxy server instead of to port 9151. The port is actually the software address once you get into the computer. And since they had the wrong port, it was saying, you know, the proxy is refusing your connection. So many users had the same problem. You can go online and see how to change the script to change the port. But actually, if you just uninstall it and reinstall the latest version of Tor, you'll get the corrected script without having to do anything, and then it should work properly. There's been a lot of talk on the discussion boards of this. Now, I don't think Verizon is blocking you at all. I don't think this is a Verizon issue. When you use Torch and encrypted data link, they're not going to try to get into an encrypted data link. They're not going to watch you. Now, your comment about NSA watching you was interesting. What NSA did that was clever, when they released Tor, they provided a copy of Firefox that had a particular vulnerability in it. And then they could see who was using Tor, and they could get into your computer using that vulnerability that was in that particular Firefox browser. Now, I don't know, and the reason they did that was because when you're using Tor, the encryption is so good that they don't know what you're looking at. But if they can get into your Firefox browser, they can get at what you're looking at before it's encrypted, so they can actually track what you're doing. So they, I don't know why they did that or who they were looking at. So all you have to do to avoid that problem is don't use the Firefox version that comes with the Tor download. Download your own Firefox, because the latest versions of Firefox don't have that particular vulnerability that NSA was using that Snowden was talking about. And you'll be safe until they find another vulnerability, which would be for the browser that you have. Now, this proxy server is going to slow you down because you're actually going to another device and asking that other device to request the web page, and it's relayed through the proxy server, so there's kind of a time delay. So the only reason people use Tor is if they want to surf anonymously. So if you're not interested in doing anonymous searching, and most people want to search anonymously because they don't want people to know what they're up to. If you don't have this need for anonymous searching, or if you're not trying to go around some sort of, content-blocking firewall like they have in China, I don't think it's worth using Tor, because it just slows it down and it doesn't buy you anything. But those were all very good questions, and thanks for that email. We got a question from the Falls Church Computer Information Systems Club. We have a CIS club there and we got an email from from Christopher Wagner. Christopher mm-hmm. Wagner is the president of our CIS club in Falls Church. He says, "Dear Tech Talk, what do you think will happen with development of electronics in the next 20 years, since electronics are continually getting smaller? At what point will we be when we can't make electronics devices any smaller? Thanks, the CIS Club." And, of course, that was actually sent by Christopher Wagner. Well, Christopher, that's a very good question, because we are getting close to the limit. Transistor density is doubled pretty reliably about every 18 months or so since the integrated circuit was first built. And this is known as Moore's Law. Moore was one of the co-founders of Intel, and he noticed that every 18 months they were doubling the density of transistor chips. And that has a number of good things. When you make things smaller, they can go faster. And so they were also using less power, although you did have more power density. But as you go smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, finally you get to the point that you don't have enough atoms in each of the features. So if, say, the insulating layer gets down to just a few atoms thick, it's no longer like silicon dioxide. It's no longer like an oxide barrier. It becomes individual atoms. And then you start having quantum effects. When you get really small, you get quantum effects, because quantum effects occur because, we have in physics this particle wave duality, where things that are particles like electrons or when you get smaller and smaller and smaller, the particles actually begin to behave like waves. And these waves then can tunnel through thin oxide layers, and you have all these quantum effects. And so if you've got all this tunneling, you'll have leakage, and they won't make a good transistor. So you finally reach a point where it gets so small that the basic electronic properties of the semiconductor break down, and you've got something else taking over. So we are getting very close to the end of Moore's Law, where we double the density or every 18 months, which means we're doubling or reducing the size by 150% every 18 months. Now the next, so we have to look into our research crystal ball to see where we're going to go. So the next thing is probably going to be carbon nanotubes. These are long chains of carbon atoms, thousands of times thinner than a human hair, and they have the potential to make highly efficient transistors with at least an order of magnitude higher performance. And they could take us beyond where silicon is currently going. Now, a research team at Stanford, you know, recently produced a proof of principle circuit using all carbon nanotubes, no silicon, and they were able to put 176 transistors in a carbon nanotube substrate. Now, theoretical work suggests that carbon nanotube computers could be an order of magnitude more efficient than the best silicon computers, and the nanomaterial's ability to dissipate heat, because it's a very good thermal conductor, means that they might be able to operate at a higher and higher speed, because the speed limit is determined by the heat. So we could probably extend our movement in Moore's law for a few more years if we go to carbon nanotubes. But now, some people actually, this is why it's at cutting edge, some people doubt that carbon nanotubes can replace silicon because it's hard to make the nanotubes. They're simply grown in a way that leaves them at kind of a tangled mess. A third of the tubes are metallic rather than semiconducting, so they cause short circuits. And so imperfections are the barrier now. But, of course, in the beginning of silicon, imperfections were the barrier. So this is a classic research problem and probably the next way to get higher performance. Now, after nanotubes, we're actually looking at quantum computing. So we actually, okay, we get so small, well, and we have quantum effects. Let's just use the quantum effects as a computer. So a quantum computer, also known as a quantum supercomputer, is a computational device that makes direct use of quantum mechanical phenomena, such as superposition and entanglement. When we actually treat the electron as a wave, the waves can be superimposed or the waves can be entangled, and we can perform operations on data. Quantum computers are different from digital computers, which are based on the transistor, and they use quantum properties to represent data and perform operations. And you get a lot of interesting effects. In April 2011, a team of scientists from Australia and Japan made a breakthrough in quantum teleportation. They successfully transferred a complex set of quantum data with full transmission integrity. What they did is they entangled the quantum states of some atoms. They separated them by a long distance, and they can actually transfer from one location to another location instantly. This would be like teleportation, so it's kind of a big breakthrough. September 2011, researchers proved that quantum computers could be made in the Von Neumann architecture, which is the standard computer architecture where RAM is separate from the processor. February 2012, IBM scientists said that they had made several breakthroughs in quantum computing in superconducting integrated circuits that put them on the cusp of building a system that will take computing to a whole new level. So quantum computing would be the next one after carbon nanotubes, but all of this is research and very exciting because it's all physics.
There you go.
That was a great question from the Computer Science IT Club.
Thank you guys for that. Now, of course, Doc, if folks have a question, they can send it to you how?
We love your questions. Send your questions to techtalk@stratford.edu. And you might also check out our Facebook page. I'm monitoring it at Facebook.com/TechTalkOnline, Facebook.com/TechTalkOnline, and we might comment about anything you say on the Facebook page during the show.
The pop quiz is coming up next. Stay tuned. More of Tech Talk in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
To put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. It's time. Time to take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. Or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, it's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. And now it is time for...
Profiles in IT.
Sorry, guys. I jumped the gun on this.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Today, we're going to be talking about Ryan Allis. Ryan Allis is co-founder and former CEO of iContact, an email marketing company. Allis was born in 1984 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but he grew up in Bradenton, Florida. At age 11, Allis set up a consulting business. And for $5 an hour, he taught local seniors how to use AOL and send pictures. That's not a bad idea.
No, it's
for
not
$5
at all.
An hour, because, you know, this is always a big mystery. How can I send pictures to my grandkids? And he managed to earn $500 that summer. So that was got 50 hours of consulting work helping out seniors in his community. At 14, he started doing website design. And at age 16, he started a web marketing consultancy called Verante. Web marketing consultancy at age 14.
Jeez.
He was a 14-year-old consultant. Verante. He still owns Verante, V-I-R-A-N-T-E, and it employs 12 staffers. He started that at age 14. It's still carrying on strong. He graduated from Manatee High School in Bradenton, Florida. I don't get Manatee
High
School.
That's a funny name for a high school.
It really. In 2003... he went to UNC, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill for college. He majored in economics. There he met the man who he would co-found iContact with, Aaron Houghton. Within 3 days of meeting, the two had an idea for iContact. They used a tool that Houghton had developed earlier to help small businesses manage email marketing. Now, the company ran really lean and struggled with cash flow, but Houghton and Allis, they got a $5,000 loan from a friend to keep them afloat after being turned down by the bank and the Small Business Administration. Now, those first dollars went into hiring a customer service person who would handle the phone. Then every additional dollar went into AdWords, which was their marketing strategy. They gathered data over the years while at iContact, and they were able to show that for every dollar they put into marketing, they got back dollar plus profit from every customer that they were able to attract. And so using that predictable business model, they were able to actually secure some venture capital funding. In 2008, Allis wrote the book on entrepreneurship called From Zero to 1 Million. In 2010, iContact generated $26 million in revenue. Not bad. I mean,
no.
He started in 2003. So they did this while they were in college. Now, what is unique about Ryan and his co-founder, they didn't drop out. They continued going to college while they ran the business. So these guys actually graduated. So Ryan's mom's really happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
In 2010, they generated $26.5 million in revenue, and they raised a total of $18 million in venture capital money from North Carolina Idea, North Carolina Capital, and Updata Partners. Allis studied economics at UNC. He graduated in 2011. So it took him a little bit longer to graduate because he's running his business. And he spoke at commencement. It was quite an inspirational commencement address. I watched it. In 2011, that same year, he gave a talk at TEDx where he focused on creating a better world. It was interesting. He very quickly began focusing on how he could use technology to help people in other countries. Very young in life, you know, when he was just in his young early 20s. This is why I wanted to feature him, because he's just not a tech guy. He actually has this philanthropy strain that he got started on right away. Allis created the 4-1s Corporate Social Responsibility Program, through which the company would donate 1% of payroll, 1% of product, 1% of employee time, and 1% of company equity to a 501c3 to help charity. In February 2012, they sold iContact to Vocus for $169 million. They started it in 2003, and in 2012, they sold it for $169 million.
That's amazing.
It's not really that bad, is it?
No,
it's not at all. And he did that while he was going to school. Now, following iContact, Allis and his co-founder, Aaron Houghton, established a $1.2 million scholarship program for children of past employees. I guess these were employees that left before they hit it big, and they thought, okay, we'll take care of their kids. That was nice to do. Allis founded the Humanity Fund, with some of his proceeds from the iContact sale. This was what he called impact investing in firms that make a difference to the community. He did impact investing in Kenya, impact investing in Uganda, and also some impact investing in the United States, where he wanted to invest in companies that would actually produce a social good. I mean, they'd make money, but social good was the primary focus. Now, when he was ready to take another trip to Kenya to check on some investments, he was actually, he wanted to see on a map all the people he knew were in Kenya. So he said, well, how can I do that? There was nothing out there where you could map all your friend's location, and that was really convenient. So he decided to build it, where you could actually track all your content, all your connections in, you know, in developing countries. And so he decided to build it, and he began working on a new company called Connect.com, and he started that company May of 2012. And that's his latest startup designed to change the world, because he felt that in developing countries, you really need to had connections in order to be successful, unless he wanted to help. And he wants to be able to make connections far more convenient and far more useful than, say, they are on Facebook. So he wants to be 10x better than Facebook with this connection protocol. He's a member of the UN Foundation Global Entrepreneurial Council, and he's traveled the world on their behalf. That's where he got all these connections with other countries. He was recognized by Inc. magazine as one of the top 30 entrepreneurs under 30, and he won the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award for the Carolinas in 2010. Now, he's now pursuing an MBA at Harvard. He's going back to school, and he's in addition to his charity work. He calls himself an avid autodidact.
Okay.
An avid autodidact. Now, you know, that is a word that I don't use that often.
I'm not familiar with that.
Auto means self,
sure.
And didact, it's derived from the word learn. He's a self-learner. In other words, somebody that just sort of gets books and learns on their own.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go back to the Greek, it would be an autodidact. Now, I'm a self-learner, but I'd never call myself an autodidact.
It sounds a little...
But where I found out that's what he was, I went to his blog. And he says he's an autodidact on his blog. I said, okay. So I had to look it up. He's also, get this, a freestyle rapper.
That's quite a combination.
And he often gets into late night flows. I guess rappers get into flows.
I am not familiar with their work, Doc.
So there you go. Ryan Alice, who's co-founder and CEO of iContact, and who turned to making the world a better place quite early, and he's actually doing some pretty good work with his philanthropy.
Okay, time's a waste, and hope you're paying attention, because your chance to win free food from us comes up in the pop quiz in just a minute here on Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM, HD2.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now, It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to the classroom of the airways. Many times people confuse us with a radio show, but actually we are not.
We're not.
Earlier in the show, we were talking about Ryan Ellis. He, of course, is co-founder and former CEO of iContact, an email marketing company. He was an entrepreneur at an early age. What is the name of the web marketing consultancy that he started at age 14? And this consultancy still is in business and is employing 12 staffers. If you get the correct answer to that, you'll win two tickets to Fine Dining, the Escoffier Dining Room, or the Karim Dining Room. Simply call the show
time is wasting, yes. So if you're calling from west of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, it's 877-936-9333. If you're calling from east of Bradenton, Florida, 877-936-9333. The wild card line for everybody else, 877-936-9333. Doc.
That's right. If you're calling from Siberia, you can use Skype. Simply go to Tech Talk Radio 1, and your call will be forwarded to the station free of charge.
Okay.
Now, earlier in the show, I talked about the new word of the year, selfie.
Yes.
It was named by Oxford Dictionary as the word of the year. Now, this word has evolved from a niche in social media to mainstream term used for a self-portrait, you know, you hold a self-portrait photograph where you hold up your cell phone and take your picture. Research suggested its frequency in the English language has increased by 17,000% during the last year. Now, selfie did have to compete with a few other words, like one word was twerk. The raunchy dance moves performed by Miley Cyrus. You know, I have to say, I didn't really know what a twerk was. Were you familiar with twerk?
I was, unfortunately. Yeah.
I'm just sheltered, Jim. Just sheltered.
Well, I am too. It just happened to be in the news. And
binge watch was another one. Means watching a lot of TV all at the same time. And here was another competitor, schmeet. Schmeet, meaning a form of synthetically produced meat from biological tissue. It's schmeet. It's synthetic meat. So, schmeet, twerk, and binge watch were close, but they did not beat out selfie.
Okay. All right. We're going now directly to line number one. This is Marty in Falls Church, Virginia. Marty, good morning. How are you, sir?
Well, good morning.
Good. Doc, quickly
yes.
ask the question.
Earlier in the show, we talked about Ryan Ellis, co-founder of iContact. What was the name of the first company which he formed?
Verante,
correct. You win two tickets to Fine Dining, the Escoffier Dining Room. Stay on the line with your name and address. We'll get those tickets out to you next week.
That's right. Andrew Mitchell, our adjunct professor for prize distribution and crowd control, is now going to take over the reins and take care of that situation.
That's
so,
right.
Doc, we have about a minute or so left.
The tech giants are really helping out in the typhoon that occurred in the Philippines. Facebook and Twitter placed ad banners at the top of their main timelines or streams, directing those who click to a banner to donate money to the organizations that would help in the Philippines. They funnel these contributions to the American Red Cross or NetHope, and the donations would go to aid those who were bringing food, water, relief supplies to the cities in the Philippines that were most seriously hurt by the super typhoon Haiyan. Now, the banner campaign was a way for Facebook and Twitter send $1.5 billion monthly active users combined, to reach 1.5 billion users combined to help them spread the word for the relief efforts. Now, Facebook was the first to solicit its donations, and Twitter shortly followed thereafter. Yahoo's done it, Apple, iTunes. I tell you, tech companies are always there to help whenever there is a disaster. I tell you, the show ended so quickly. We had just so much fun. We love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. You can go to techtalkonline.com to sign up for the podcast. And I'll tell you, we love you to check out the Stratford programs. Go to stratford.edu and tell them that you heard about them on Tech Talk Radio.
Tuned in late. Want to hear some more of this program? Again, listen in for the Tech Talk replay at 2 o'clock today. See you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com, the only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Coming up today, we've got sports. American University basketball. The Eagles go to Mount St. Mary's to take on the Mountaineers. That happens at 4 o'clock with the pregame coverage starting at 3:30. Wizards-Knicks tonight starting at 6:45. Weather forecast, sunny, breezy, and chilly today. Highs only near 50 degrees. Right now outside our studios in Northwest Washington, we've got sunny skies and 43 at 10 a.m.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does